מגיל סגל לפרקטיס עוד אחד, טייטים, also עוד ילום. The point is that there was a lot of money that Treasury had invested in this program following the criminal justice system review process. And one of the outcomes of the criminal justice system review was to ensure, the finding was that we needed to have an integrated justice system which will begin at entry point and end at the end point, which will be fast on the way to correctional services and potentially get out into social development. So this program is about that, and it's not about your general IT in the department as such. So the first point then speaks to the project that we had indicated last year was a pilot. We had said we had connected 99 police stations with 20 courts at that point, and we did that work last year during the under review, and it has progressed quite considerably since that report. But this is just limited to the progress that we had attained at that point. We also had a single data store that had to be developed, and that single data store is basically to warehouse all the information related to the criminal justice system from SAP all the way to correctional services. That single data store is currently being advanced, but at that point in time we had just started the work. We have data warehouse that was developed, I think, from 2006 all the way to 2011. But where we were not, what was not happening in this data warehouse was that the endpoint connections to connect to all departments was not working. In fact, was not activated at all. And the reason why it had not been activated was because each department in the value chain has different levels of IT readiness and IT use and IT awareness. And as a result, that data warehouse was developed and was somewhat advanced, and we needed to upgrade our systems to be able to connect to the warehouse and for the information to flow. So the only department, and not in every area, but the only department that are able to right now in past is the NPA and the Department of Justice. If I say NPA, I mean NPA now is an organization and the Department of Justice is an organization. So our systems, to a great extent, are already speaking. Then there are certain elements in the SAP file that we have now upgraded and it's now speaking to the system. But it's not everything. But now we can see that at least three departments are on the same system. In part, a bit of legal aid insofar as messaging, instant messaging is concerned. As and when a person gets booked in SAP, if the person is booked electronically, the message then goes to legal aid immediately saying, prepare for legal aid, and so it is, legal aid becomes aware immediately, the prosecution becomes aware immediately as well. So to a certain extent, it's beginning to work. And what we are trying to do now is to just ensure that we perfect that element, that line, so that line works completely. And links back to the data warehousing. And the challenge remains in the whole value chain is that in particular, and I'm not singling them out, but I'm just trying to illustrate the point. In particular, correctional services is slightly behind, actually much more behind than everybody else, and perhaps in some areas social development is also quite behind in the ICT space in terms of connecting in the IGS environment. They may be very good in other areas, but in just connecting to the IGS environment, they are slightly behind. In particular, correctional services, they are still just dealing with the basic things of computer awareness levels, and because they operate almost like the CPS environment, where they have different evidence, not because of lack of trying on their part, but that must be overhauled, and that's the explanation we have been given. But we, in terms of the structure, perhaps I must just clarify this because I have not explained it. In terms of the IJS cluster, it's chaired by an official from the Department of Justice, who got the chair we use in the cluster that we normally come into Parliament with. He chairs the IJS cluster. In the IJS cluster, you have staff, you have NPA, you have legal aid, you have correctional services, you have social development, and sometimes from time to time, then other departments are invited as per need, like Home Affairs gets invited per need, because they contribute directly to our systems in terms of, we have a system in the master's environment called MOVIT. And that system is the system when that was illustrated in the launch of the master's environment, where we verify the ID details of the person who applied. So other people we call as and when we need, and we then connect with them on those pieces. So that is where we are on that. We then said we need a dashboard that will have 28 KPIs, and those 28 KPIs will be value chain KPIs, they're not just justice KPIs. We will also be represented in those KPIs, but they cover the whole value chain in terms of the criminal justice system, the docket, when who was booked, where is the testing, and that type of information. But in addition, how many cases got logged into the system, from what police station, and where are those people, which court have they gone to, and do they have legal aid, and that type of thing. That is what we are trying to track with the KPI system. And once we have finalized the KPI. Now, this process of the KPI system, we had said we would start with 9. The 9, we've uploaded information, but it was basic information, so it was not live information. Now, we wanted to load live information. We worked with staff very critically to try and get that going, but so our target was made, but we couldn't get this thing on target because the original information and source must be loaded by staff, and we struggled to get that on target. But we are working to try and catch up with that. There are other dynamics, but we are working on that. Then we made significant progress at long last on the person identification and verification application, which we call PIVA. That system is intended to begin to identify who is in the system. And because a person gets booked by ID number, gets booked by where they were found, gets booked by name, gets booked by all sorts of manner of things. And so PIVA is intended to assist us to book a person one way, and so that the person gets tracked using one number throughout the system. So you will hear people talking about 5 fingerprints or 10 fingerprints or what, thumbprints. That's what it refers to. And we thought the system would also assist us in responding to the bill that was recently passed by the Portfolio Committee on Forensic DNA. We thought in part this aspect will assist some elements of it, but not entirely. So other elements we are now busy working on them as the committee. Then the members will recall that we have the audiovisual remand system in our court, and it's working very well. A lot of cases have been postponed using just the AER system without witnesses having to go to court. And so we've reduced number of escapes as a result of that, but also reduced the number of risks associated with transporting people to court. So that has been helpful. We are experiencing some small challenges because some courts that have ABR systems are not using them. And so in this current year, we started following up and renegotiating how the ABR must be used, and perhaps even introducing regulations on and making compulsory people to use the ABR system. But there is definitely value and merit in having the ABR system. And there are other courts where we cannot afford to put ABR systems that are screaming out wanting to have ABR systems, because it will help them in terms of their routine and out of our court. So it's an important tool. And it is working. Where it's working very well. And we're very proud of that. We've started the capacitation process to capacitate the IJS program. Now, let me explain what that means. Historically, the IJS program, we were assisted by people from the private sector, strictly speaking, only. And of course, because they have skills. But we very quickly started realizing when we took over the project, effectively, the project was always with us in the department when I joined the department. But I just wasn't too sure that I understood what was happening. So I took the project, the whole IT in the department, to report to me directly so that I can see whether it's moving or not moving. So we took over this, and then we realized that all of the people that were doing it were actually consultants other than our own people, maybe the one or two people that were doing. And as a result, it's been a struggle in the past few months to move those people from SAS and bring them to the department so that we can see them on a daily basis, whether they are at work, they are designing, because there you have system designers, system planners, and what, all the important people, but they are everywhere, and we need to have control over them. So we decided that we are going to now bring in our own people into the IJS program, initially on a contract basis, and then we will convert those contracts once the structure has been finalized for them. But there has been now, we haven't signed anything with the National Commissioner yet, but we have agreed that those people are going to move from there, come to the Department of Justice. We are creating space for them so that we can see them every day and they can do their work. There is sufficient resistance to drive anybody insane, but we are going to just drive that process, because otherwise, without that being done, all the things that are presented to are not going to happen. You need to see the people who are at work, otherwise you are going to start managing them. I've discussed all of those and move this to discuss. Then I would like to move to the IT in our own environment and maybe let me pause and take a question.
I take it you understand how this IJS system is meant to work. Sorry, Doctor. It's not my intention. Because it's been coming a long way, and it's meant to assist everyone in the chain. From the police officer who arrests me, all the way to the prosecutor who's sitting in the court now and is going to prosecute. They must be able to punch in my details and see that, well, this fellow is now being arrested for housebreaking, but when he was in Cape Town, he was charged and prosecuted and found guilty of the following crimes. And in Johannesburg, the following and the same. Presently, if I am arrested, unless the arresting officer picks up the phone, who's he going to phone? Where is he from? Doesn't know. So this system is supposed to speak to one another. Police, prosecution authority, correctional services, because you're out on parole. All that must appear on the system, and so that everyone then understands that, okay, this fellow know all there is to know about. Presently, if I appear in court, unless I say to the presiding officer, well, Your Worship, in 1998 I was arrested and convicted for the following. In 2004 I was arrested and convicted. Unless I do that, I just stay silent and they won't know a thing. In the meantime, I'm a, what is it called them in the old days, a blowbite. Serial offender. I've been pardoned three times, paroled three times already, which is what's happening now. And the people out there are saying, aren't you people supposed to know who the criminals are? and that's our difficulty. Now, DG first. No, I'm asking DG the question. You don't, not yet. Not yet. Just, there's a few things. One, the initial budget from Treasury, help me, is it correct that it was 22 billion? That's the first question. Wait, just, secondly, this is not a question, but so that you understand, my counterpart in the police portfolio came to me and said, do you know about this? I went back in my memory and I said, yes, in the early 2000s we spoke about this and I understand there were initiatives. So she says, well, yes, and we raised it in my portfolio committee. And the police, they've bought one or two computers here and there. And so she says, how do we? I said, well, the best people I know is ask the Auditor General to check if it is 22 billion rand, and I'm not saying it is, then there's merit in saying to the Auditor General, please start at the beginning and see how much has been done so that the taxpayer knows they are getting value for money, and so that we, the elected public representatives, then are also satisfied that what the money was supposed to have been spent on has indeed been spent on that. So I don't know if the Auditor General people have spoken to your department, but we are still waiting for that because we formally requested of the Auditor General's office to check on this. It began way back then, I think you said 2007, 2006, and since then we've not, this, I think this is the first report that we have received about the system. And I'm not sure that that's a good thing. But we are expected to keep tabs on these things on a regular basis. Now, that's insofar as my input on this. But maybe you have questions.
We are going to put you on the spot.
That's a good thing to say, just a pre-education before I put my question.
Yes.
Thank you, Jake. I think the idea is missing a very good thing. It interfaces in a long time. Was it not supposed to be one of you what you should call injustice?
No.
What is the difference between this one and injustice?
We explain.
Okay. But anyway, I think it's going to be good once it starts operating. For the same reasons that actually put forward, I'm quite concerned about the fact that saying that correctional services doesn't make it very specific. Because it will only work with all the departments. Therefore, the same type of system and the same type of capacity. And I think what is then impossible would be for you to have like something like a shared package where you manage to view, but you don't actually manage to end up with the information. So a situation of that data can then be very much helpful for all the departments and communities or social development. I don't know about who must have about approval. But you know that correctional service used to have a very good system for the inspection judge. I wonder how come mistaken, 1998, 97, when the attorney is coming to the Department of Correctional Services, even really glad that you know everything about every prisoner, and whenever anything happens, the fluent, the transfer, and death or whatever, the first thing would actually sit at the agency would know who to actually report to, which means that correctional service, if they are serious about it, it's possible for them to come up with the system. But we live in an information technology era, and I think we need to really try and get maximum benefit as a country from information technology. The one department that at some point really perfectly well was that, so the latest was the management of ICT. But I do believe that every government department can manage to reach the same level of IT systems. Because only through information communication technology would we be in the position to run systems that are really effective. Are we also commenting about information technology?
Mr. Mani in the back will respond to the issue of budget. I think he was around when the first test was opened for the ADC, for the IJS. And on the ADR, now I'm confused about that. On the ADR,
is correct, even the chairperson, definitely when I joined the Board of Public Sector in 1998, this IGS was a program. The money was initially allocated to the Department of Safety and Security, the major chunk of the allocation. They've used the money for substantial infrastructure and minimum investment, but for each year since 98, there was an allocation. When I joined National Treasury, it was my job to also oversee the IGS minimum allocation. And I can confirm again that a major chunk of the money was allocated to police. You know, the last few years there was a decision because of police getting the benefit of most of the money to move the money to justice. Currently, justice is supporting the Department of, you know, as indicated, education. You know, we support sometimes home affairs. I think the best institution that possibly can give us a sense, I don't believe it's only 2 million, it's only 2 billion. But Treasury can give us, since the inception of this program, for each year, and I'll try to get the information, and possibly report tomorrow to you. I mean, what was the allocations per department? I think when I worked in correctional service had this admission and release system, the ADR, the MARIC system that you referred to, honorable member. The big challenge, and again, I'm the finance person, well, the big problem was how do you work with correctional services and we have 5 categories of crime? In police, we've got 25 categories of crime. Now you want these two systems to talk to each other. So correctional used to have a summary way of collating crimes while police has substantially more. I think for me, you know, as I see the program, you know, there is now substantial ownership by the chair of the cluster of this program, the DG. It seems at this stage, substantial investment needs to happen in the infrastructure and the development side of correctional services. They might have the system, but the system can't talk to the other systems. So I think, allow me to trace the information from Treasury, then I can give a report on exactly what kind of monies was allocated to police, and when I can give you an indication of what is currently available in our environment for investments.
Then on the issue of the AG chair, when it was first raised last year, when the chair raised it, we went back, we I sensitized all members of the class, and we put it as one of the reporting issues that we deal with every other quarter, not every quarter, but every other quarter, just to see our state of readiness. But we immediately, after that meeting, we immediately put together various teams of, well, a team comprising of various internal auditors from our cluster to then go through the Department of Justice, the Department of Staff, Correctional Services, and all involved to just ensure that we have whatever it is that the AG was going to ask of us. So that work did happen almost immediately, and they are still looking at that. We asked them to also just do not a preliminary audit, but do an assessment, an assessment of how bad the situation is. We had done an assessment from a performance point of view, whether we were making progress, but we had not done the assessment of whether we were receiving value for money, and that assessment was not able to tell us that. And given the limited time that we have given them to do that work for us. The third issue, I met with the Auditor General, because it was just as we were about to start with auditing the department, it was at the financial year end when the department had just finalized their annual financial statements and annual reports for audit. We requested them to delay a bit and to allow us to go through the departmental audits because they are quite involved. So they then came back, the AG there came back with a plan, and they said the first thing they are going to audit is not necessarily the value for money and the hardcore money issue. They are going to start auditing the governance issues. In other words, when at the beginning, what was the governance structure, who was there, and all of that. So they are going to start the... Right now, I think they're going to move to the second late. They've met with some of us. They didn't meet with me, but I know they met with the chair of the IGS board. So we've said it's fine. They must go ahead as planned. We approve that they go ahead in the way they had suggested, which is because for every audit, they must come to you. They will tell you how the audit plan is going to be, and then you can say, okay, they must audit you. So the governance audit, we haven't received anything from them, but we suspect they will tell us any time from now that the governance audit looks like this, and it was wrong here, and it needs to be strengthened here, or whatever the situation is going to be. The second bit is that is the value for money, as well as how much have we spent on this. Now, this I will not be responsible for it, so if the secretary could put it on record. But at a point in time, I think it was in 2011, which was that point in time, we took a good look at how much we thought we had invested in the project as sunk cost. And I think it came up to, and of course we'll correct that number tomorrow, but just to give you a sense so that you can live with the rough margin, that we concluded that we had spent plus minus 2.4, 2.6 billion over the duration of the project. Now, those figures we will confirm share tomorrow, but again, it was a snapshot at the point in time. It doesn't include what we've invested between 2011 to today. So that snapshot would be far out, but that was the figure that we were talking about with the chair of IGLS. Insofar as the systems in correctional services, it's not as if their systems are not working necessarily or dysfunctional, but the point I was raising is that each center has its own, call it IT system, and that's the issue. And there was a program that they had put in place, which was the core program for the Department of Social Development, and that program is called RDOM. Forgive me, because I can't recall what RDOM stands for. My memory just can't remember that. RDOM, effectively, what it's about, it's almost similar information at the booking of a person who gets into correctional services. Who is the person? Where do they come from, what crime did they commit, and so on and so on and so on and so on. But from the correctional services side, in other words, this booking is came from this place and that place, who committed these offences, is due for trial on this day, first appearance on this day, and so on and so on. So it's similar information. So ideally, if you had the SAP booking system and RDOM picking up, you should have a seamless flow of information. But what happened in 2011, in fact, maybe even 2010, but primarily in 2011, I think there was some dispute of sorts between correctional services and whatever suppliers, which then delayed this program, which is the RDOM. And that is why we then can't connect with them. And that's the point I wanted to say. So it's not as if their systems are dysfunctional, but also, naturally, they would have prepared up to that point. And the more we prepare and they are still staying here because of that dispute, it means the more they stay behind and other people are moving. But it won't be too difficult a job to then pull everybody together when they are ready. It's just going to take a lot more resources, because then we'll do that within a compressed time as well. The enforcement mechanism, I agree. We've been thinking about it. We don't have a solution, not as yet. But we have part of what we're trying to do is we're trying to do an assessment on a regular basis, and this program now reports to the class on a quarterly basis, and we receive very detailed reports which say on each element of the program, where is the problem, who is the problem, and which DG must go back and do what. So we are beginning to get those reports. We believe that those reports in themselves will give us some kind of a peer review of sorts that will assist us in moving forward with that. Then on a number of correctional facilities that are linked to the AVR thingy, Mr. Mane, which is not the one who comes to them.
Well, it's my brother from another mother. thanks, Chair. It's quite a bit of a very detailed Chairperson list, but I can just give you the Cape Town one. They are listed per province. In Cape Town, we've got Belleville as a court that makes Goodwood, and then we have Mitchell's Plain, Cape Town, Blue Downs, Wynberg, Bethlehem, Kailicha linked to Cosmo, and then we have Pal linked to Allende. And then you have been in KZN, and I'm not sure if I should go through the... I can add them up, because I've got them here for, you know, the province. I can give you the totals. And then with respect to who goes there, it's actually largely used for postponements. We don't use it for trials. You know, it's used for postponements just to avoid bringing people to court when we know that the police are still investigating, they will be postponed. So it saves the state the cost of transportation, eliminates the risk of escapes and, you know, that kind of thing.
So the complaint they raised on the right?
The social ones visiting
as well as the opportunity for them to contact the lawyers.
The last part, Chairperson, as you said, it's, you know, people would need to visit to see, but the system also in court, they're able to communicate, you know, so they're able to see what is going on there. So it's actually in court. More like the one that you use for telephone,
video
conferencing, you know. So the court would have the screens; they could actually see, and you know, what is going on between the court and the correctional facility.
Insofar as issues where people complain that attorneys can consult with their clients, we haven't received a formal complaint yet. I haven't, let me put it that way, because people could complain anywhere in this department, but I haven't. But I have heard that where there is not too big an uptake of the AVR system, in other words, where they are there but they are not used, is people have used a whole range of reasons, including people complaining that they are not able to converse with their clients, and that is why they are not using it. Whether that is true or not, we haven't quite tested that. We have just been focusing on entrenching the use of AVR. Now, when it comes though to the issue of attorneys consulting with their clients, there are facilities to enable people to consult, even in correctional facilities, if they indeed wanted to, and that is always arranged. So we, maybe that's why we haven't taken it too seriously. But as I say, there hasn't been a formal complaint that I recall receiving.
Honourable members, just to try and further respond to Mr. Holland, he said I'm not answering on behalf of the department. I was privileged to attend the launch of the system, the admissions plan, on the invitation of the minister. And you need to understand the system is there to deal with remands. It's not at the trial stage. And so the need for the attorney to consult with the client will then be limited to the remand and if no, nothing else. on that occasion, this question did arise, and we were given the assurance that even before that demand, the client, the attorney and the client would be afforded the opportunity confidentially without anybody interfering to speak to one another. And the system was supposed to have been designed to provide for that. Okay. But regards to the friends and relatives, they must go to the prison. This is a remand thing, and it's to prevent. You see, Advocate Holloway, sir, every day in the courts at 3 o'clock, I think, they close. All the cases just stop because there's a rule that in the prison, if a they don't call them prisoners, what do they call them? If the inmate is not there by a certain time, he or she doesn't get supper. And that inmate then can make a big fuss and scream because he's been discriminated against by being held in the court. He'll say, it's not my fault this court went on past 4 o'clock. So it's just an remand, you see. So you prevent. I don't know if you've driven down Rulang Street in the morning like I do. Some of those trucks come carrying the prisoners. If you think the ministerial blue light cars are bad, those trucks from the prisons are worse. They'll shove you out the road if you're in the way. Because they need to stay on the road for as little bit as limited time as possible, get from the prison to the court. Where are they coming from? Holsmore, all the way here to the Cape Town Magistrates Court. That's a long distance. And if you want to sabotage the whole thing and have prisoners escape, it shouldn't be hard to do. And all this does is do away with that. The prisoner sits in prison and the remand is heard here in court without his presence being necessary.
Sorry, Chairperson, I can just give you the numbers. It's 47 courts linked to 21 prisons. Total, yeah. I think Chair will print it because it's a long, it's 8 pages, but you can print it.
Please. 21 prisons.
I think that number has not changed since the Mitchell's plane launch, because that's the number we counted then. But I think there was a reason we said in our strategy document that, well, in our APP, that we're not going to grow the number. We didn't want to put these things everywhere. We wanted to see that they're working where they're working and they're working well. And that's what we gave ourselves last year and this year, just to ensure that they are working. And whoever is not using, we are moving to where it's used, so that we can see the maximum value before we deploy everywhere. Thank you. Then we move to the information technology system in the department. Again, in 2010, we came here with serious sadness because our systems were collapsing, and we indicated to this honourable house that we couldn't work because our systems were on the verge of falling down. And we said this was because we didn't have financial resources to be able to do that. And as we were then granted additional resources for the following year, which was 2011, 2012, 2012, 2013, and 2013, 2014. We then went back to start refreshing our ICT infrastructure. Now, maybe before I then speak to the refreshing process, there's a lot that we've done in the past 3 years in the ICT environment, but specifically speaking, in the past 3 years from 2011 all the way to now. And we have had to look at people in-house, look at how we contract the services. In other words, do we bring in external people for what purpose in the business, and which elements do we keep as a department and all of that. So we went back to the IT model, and we've adopted an IT model and an IT strategy. We finalized that. We then developed the governance framework for the ICT. You recall that one of the areas in the audit outcome that we had a problem in was that we didn't have the ICT policy framework. We then developed the ICT policy framework. we decided that we didn't want too many consultants in our space. We wanted our own people to manage our own ICT environment, and that wherever we have consultants, they're going to be strictly limited in those areas. So we created a number of positions, and we started filling them, and we have already filled 25 positions in the department, because prior to that, all our IT was strictly speaking outsourced, and all we were doing is we were managing the people that were doing our IT, just like in finance. The model was kind of the same. So we built that capacity chair. We spent the whole of 2011 and 2012 building that capacity, but doing the things that I've already spoken to. We also then, we started with the procurement process as well, because there were some areas where the procurement was almost at a standstill, and all we were doing is we were servicing the existing contracts. We extended the contract, I think, in 2010, 2011, and I think we which provides us with basic services for IT, which includes your installations and all of those things, and computers, printers, and all of that. And so that contract has been going on for some time. Now, with all of that work, we are beginning to see a different snapshot at this point in time. We think that our IT is beginning to stabilize. We think that we have better control over our IT plans, as it were. We have a plan. We are procuring according to the strategy that we said we were going to follow. And yes, indeed, there are things that are still going haywire every now and again. But overall, I think we have a better control and a better handle of what is going on in our IT environment. In addition, Chair, while we also, I've already spoken about the ICT government, I may just reiterate that it's the policy framework that they had to develop after DPSA finalized theirs last year, around October, November last year. We then finalized ours by the end of the financial year. Modules along that one, because we couldn't do ours before DPSA gave us those guidelines on it, and we were not allowed to. As I've indicated, we've done a lot of designs and systems development in our own system, whether we are upgrading our own software and whether we are procuring software and licenses and all of that. So that work has been going on, but it's quite involved work. It may look very simple when it's done, but it's quite involved before when you still put the pieces together. So indeed, our government outcomes have been different this year. They've been very positive, but they are not anywhere near where they should be in a year's time or so. But we've also recently signed up on all the government committees that are required in terms of the ICT policy and strategy that we put in place, and we are comfortable that system is working. Here we have been allocated a bit of money, as the budget presentation will show, and we are moving with speed to fill in all the capacity that we need to fill to be able to run the department in the middle that is consistent with our strategy. In terms of the actual renewal of the and I'm just going to go straight to B. We've done a replacement of IT servers, storage devices, central data centers. We've replaced a lot of those. We've replaced 133 servers and storage devices in regions and at court level. We've procured 4,000 desktops for which installations have been completed. The procurement was done in the previous year. The installation was finalized this year. We've enhanced a number of tools for the judiciary, and we've procured a number of laptops for the judiciary. And you would think they would be happy, eh? And they're not. And we've concluded that installation. We've procured a total of 260 data lines, which was just basically an upgrade. But maybe let me pause on that one. Data lines aligns where all our information moves through. And because we are a big business, our information kind of gets very big very quickly and crowds the data lines. And so our business gets very, very slow. So we have to upgrade on a regular basis, and we're quite excited to do that. But we are confident that whatever is remaining, we are going to upgrade. Thank you.
I'm also concerned about the 173 servers. Aren't they too many? How do you centralize your work? Mm-hmm. And you have backups? Because if it's 173 servers, we must have like similar number of backups. Mm-hmm. So do you have offsite backups?
We 173 servers, we've rationalized quite significantly from previous, but In some areas, we need additional servers because, as you know, the distance between our cores is quite huge. And if you have a collapse in one system, then that whole area then gets a shutdown, and we don't want that. And that is why, in some areas, we've regionalized, and in some areas, we've consolidated. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed, we have off-site storage, off-source. It's not at an optimal level. In fact, part of our strategy is then to move to building our off-site storage capability as a risk mitigation process to mitigate against the potential loss of information. But we do back up on a daily basis. We used to back up on a 3-weekly basis, but we are now down backing up on a daily basis in some areas of work. And for instance, if you have your maintenance shutdown, we have a mechanism to ensure that maintenance is not continuing to be paid, even if it's shut down, because we've made other arrangements to do that.
So if you see there's anything catastrophic happening, it's not in the same building?
No, it's not in the... We have an off-site storage in Renbeck, is it Renbeck? We have and I won't tell the exact address, but it's there. And we are building capacity around it so that in terms of the philosophy of the module, we have said the philosophy would be emulating our whole network into the offsite storage so that you have something that is somewhat similar to what is happening in the department. But there are good people with good brains who come to say to us, maybe you need to look at a slightly different model that will cost you a lot less, but you will not have to emulate the 173 servers, as an example. So that's what, in part, our policy framework is looking at, which is the better model to manage your offsite storage so that you have business continuity that is unhindered going forward. So that we've invested a bit of time to understand, to appreciate the nature of our business, and to appreciate who we are impacting in terms of the business that we run. Software licenses have already spoken for the now we did a lot of work for the judiciary because of course they were very unhappy about pretty much everything that we do, but that's okay. The point I want to raise about the judiciary is that we have not just looked at the judges, we've also looked at the magistrates, which we thought there was an area that was requiring a lot more support in terms of infrastructure. So that we have already done. But it's not always enough because the IT infrastructure and equipment and software and all of these things need regular updates. And that's where I think our resources.
And you said desktop, they are there.
They are there as well. Last year we went on a big buying spree, So that is working well. Those numbers are there for the members to read. But we've also looked at the same type of support for the masters. We've improved scanners. We've improved everything to do with the masters. Not every master's office. Let me indicate that. But generally, in offices where we said we were going to be paperless going forward, like the Western Cape, like Mpumalanga, and a few others, we are trying to move with speed in going paperless so that we don't much a physical document. Now, the paperless system, that bullet point 2 and that bullet point 3 talks to the paperless system, but I want to go back to bullet point 1. Here we...
Not sure I'm still answering the question. I think you should move forward. Oh, are you not?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's a small question on page on the slide number 63,
Chair. 63,
okay. Yeah. Sorry. And the IT human resources capacity. In 2012-2013, the report goes, a total of 37 positions were created, and 25 positions were filled last financial, and the rest have been filled financially. So in total, how many of those 37 positions have been filled?
All the positions have been filled in that environment, but those were the positions, maybe let me explain that. Those were the positions that we had identified and created at that point in time. And now we are growing the establishment based on the demand of the services as I've already articulated, but yes, all the positions have been filled.
We've created 27 more.
Yes.
We still need to be filled.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But the 37 have been filled. That's the point I'm trying to raise. But we've created additional positions which we are going to be recruiting and filling in this current financial year.
They said the small manager, because I would have thought they would have said the total of 37 positions created.
It's English, so we apologize. Just on the maintenance front, there are a number of things that have to be done, but maybe they're not just done for maintenance, but I'm going to focus on maintenance now. We are creating various modules to manage different elements of maintenance, the application side, the whatever that we need to, including the reporting system. So those modules are created on an ongoing basis, so we keep doing that work on an ongoing basis. I've already spoken to the paperless system in the master's environment. I want to see that. Number four is what I indicated earlier, that the only outstanding thing that made us red was the fact that we had not finalized the specifications for the TPF system. So that's the point we are just trying to indicate. Members would recall that we had a big issue around the offsite storage. Thank you.
put on the date in here. Anything after this is how we receive the money from the person who must pay the obligor, and how we dispatch the money, what we receive, how quickly we get to the child, where through ESP. So basically, the two must be read.
Okay, where they depart on, and then the parties that go to outside the court, they give each other money. How do you do that?
We have two. Okay, let me say we now have two regimes.
Mm-hmm.
The first regime is what we in our control.
Mm-hmm.
This regime is in our control.
Mm-hmm.
They have agreed. They are paying each other. It's not within our control. All we have is a court order which says this one applies. And the other party will have to come to us and say this person is not paying because the money doesn't flow through our system. You understand? We can only have control if the money comes from the obligor, goes through our system, and gets paid to the beneficiary.
That's your senior counsel.
No, she's actually coming along very well.
Okay.
I don't know why this is
okay.
She's responding so well, and I'm really getting satisfied because I'm getting information. Go on.
So that's the first regime. This regime is within our total control.
Yeah.
For now. The second regime you are talking about, you recall that when we came in 2010 and 2011, we said we really are trying to get people to pay each other directly because there's a risk of their money sitting in our system. When we don't pay this money on time, so sometimes we pay long beneficiaries, sometimes the money gets lost. And we are trying to eliminate this eventuality, the negatives of them. And we said, where it is possible, we are going to request the presiding officers to give judgment for direct payment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's happening, there are courts already, since we started this process, there are courts already. In Kensington Park, I think one in the Western Cape, and I think one in the...
Many
in the Northern Cape.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a few in the northwest, where people are already paying each other direct.
Mm-hmm.
They will only visit us when they want to vary the maintenance order. In other words, they will only go to court when they want to vary the maintenance order. So if we don't see them, we assume that everything is going well, because we don't have direct control, because we never see the money.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Now, there is a risk to that, because if the victims does not have the ability to go back to court and apply for maintenance variation, or tell the court that they are not receiving the maintenance, there is a real risk that they may not be receiving it, and you know, thinking that they are receiving it. We have not gone so far as to say what kind of mechanism can assist us to track that, but it's something that we have been thinking about, but we have not put in a solution.
Need a mechanism to
track it. Yes.
And because sometimes, and this is what we are actually seeing is, when that happens, if I'm a six-year report, an order has been given out from the payment that they want, and then it stops somewhere in the week. It's not always the case that you find that you still have the energy to go and start owning the process from scratch, which means there's got to be a tracking mechanism. Even if it's a once-a-year kind of a system, that just wants to know as to whether this is really taking place. So that you don't have a gap in terms of maintenance.
No, I agree. We'll think about it. We'll try and find more.
You could actually also do an audit of such orders.
Yes.
As to whether all of them are still effective. Maybe more than half of them are not effective anymore.
Thank you very much. We were invited to present our strategy and this issue of the
off-site storage came up negatively because the project was at the teething stage and Just to reiterate and rehash the story for the members, just for completeness. In 2010, when I first joined the department, we discovered that we were losing a lot of documents and we had a lot of negative stories that files were getting lost and it was taking forever to find them, if ever found, and all of that. And we said, how can we solve this problem? And we realized that in the previous 2 years, I think the then minister had also commissioned a research of sorts, and we said, let's go back to that research instead of starting the process anew. We did that. We went through a tender process. Of course, we procured a company in Mela. They came, and year one was a very difficult year because, one, we hopelessly underestimated the type of images that needed to be digitized and the number of files and all of those things. But we've improved with this project, and we've learned together with the project as the project has been going along. I think the Western Cape, we are now using it as the model of the courts that have digitized the documents correctly. So the project in itself has gone very well. There are still challenges with the project, but overall, I think we are on the happy side. We've digitized sufficient images to know that those documents will not be lost ever again. But we will be going back to Expo to look at how do we then sustain this beyond the existence of the contracted service provider. And that's the next step that we need to look at. But in the meantime, we are rolling over, we are rolling the project to the other courts, like the labor court, where you have high volumes. Because we have not gone to every court, we've just gone to courts that have high volumes of documents and no storage. So it's high volume, no storage. Like if you go to Devon High Court today, okay, not today, but when I last went, they had files pretty much, except in the ceiling, they had files, High Court, I mean, everywhere, almost at the door. Well kept, but it's just not sustainable. So those are the courts that we are targeting with this type of project.
And the South Austin High Court?
Sorted. That's why you never received that letter. We've already done
34,000 million. Sorry, million, 34 million.
Yeah.
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 About the
story.
And
the
price
of the
price
of the
price
of the When I'm talking about the sustainability now, I'm talking about the next phase of that, where we say, how do our employees then take this project and run with it? Remember, the problems then were the norming and forming between the service provider and the officials. There was just no understanding, there was no training, or people just had their own perceptions, and we just had too many problems. But once we had ironed out all of those problems, the project then started running. The court files are received on time, as far as we are aware. If there is a problem, even say an isolated problem, that can now be dealt with. But those problems are not in the majority anymore. And
at the time we're talking about it, so then the judges are saying that they can't make
they should be working now. They have filed. Oh, my father.
Okay.
Anytime.
you've put Devon High Court here, so I'm taking advantage.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yes. the new judge president has complained violently about the Devon High Court building. This is not related to the files, but just that the building. I don't know whether that has been
pretty much everything the JP has indicated. No, I do agree. The building is very small for the purpose for which it's supposed to serve. The community that the building serves has grown 3, 4, 5 times or even more than that. And because of that, naturally, the building will then be inadequate. We have been in conversation since 2011, maybe even before my time, but I think I got involved around 2011 to try and work with public works to try and introduce some level of additions, whether we were, and we spoke with the Department of Defense, because on the side is the military was. We spoke with them. There was a point at which they were amenable to letting us use their building, but the processes collapsed in the hands of public works, so we lost out on that. There is now an old building, a very old building, just on, I don't know, I'm not geographically inclined.
Alongside.
Yeah, alongside, but that side, but alongside. Behind the court, there's an old building there, which is in a very shady condition. But the JP and Public Works in the region had spoken around that to see if they couldn't. And at some point, they had agreed they were going to assist us. Now, between agreement and the internal issues that are currently plaguing Public Works, that has not really taken off. I have been there 3 or 4 times to see the situation, and the situation is not getting better. When I talk about this document the example I'm using is quite a sad affair, because why am I telling this, because the acting regional head is there. But when you come into the registry where people come in and look for files, you find queues of people. And if I say queues, it's not because of inefficiency. It's just that there is just no space, so they can't go inside. So they sit outside and they queue to wait for files. And it's something that there is nothing we can do about. It's a sad state of affairs, Chair, and I mean, as a department, there is no additional space where you can put a motor home or anything like that. That space is very small, and it has that old building, which ideally should be put down, and then you can extend the court there, ideally. So it's not a good state. In my younger days, I did work there, and the building was actually quite good. They must just decide what they want to do. We want a building. And
we may need to decide for.
Shall we? If I say they must
decide.
Don't
need you, DJ.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
The portfolio committee. Because this is the problem of DPW. The minister of this. Well, the problem is that. The sense we get is they don't know what they're doing. This is a high court, and when the judge president complains, it's not a minor thing, you know. And so it's not like there are buildings around the court that could be bought, and then the court's building be extended by building up or whatever the case may be. But it needs Department of Public Works. Who is the lead department there? It's not justice. You see, that justice becomes their client, as it was. but anyway, all right.
Surely we can't pass slide 65.
Oh, 65.
this administration is this portfolio committee supported this department through the BRR process. You gave us BRR process. You as a committee, you must be grateful because you supported us 100 million, 105, 110 million over 3 year period. So if a community in Okunzunkulu or wherever now suddenly have a speedier service, because of the day price has been fixed, service already is because of your intervention. The point that I want to raise is we must also appreciate your contribution in the budget process. Thank you.
He meant to say they are grateful. We are happy.
Oh,
we help them. So
no, thank you very much. I agree. I do bring that point, but I'm not known for to update people like you have. Then we move to program two. The strategic objectives primarily are the coordination of the JCPS cluster towards the delivery of outcome 3 or 2 in South Africa are included. We want to improve delivery of maintenance services, increased protection of the rights of vulnerable groups, increased access to justice by underserved communities, improved delivery of services at cost, and capacitation of the Office of the Chief Justice. So those are the areas that we're going to talk to. Mm. The vulnerable groups primarily are the people who are at most risk, the children, the senior citizens, the people who are likely to be victims, like your LGBTI community, people who are lesbian, gay, the gay community. They wouldn't be too happy to be known as gay community because they're not all gay. Going through funding us unless we maybe you report per manent, something to that effect. Now, the difficulty that we are facing is that in some areas, yes, because it shows that the demand, but we aren't going to be able to convert all of these costs that we are using as base of costs to be permanent costs, because then the money we are getting is not enough to convert all of them into permanent costs. But we are going to have to look and see which ones can be converted into permanent costs, and those will be the ones with the highest volumes. I think whenever we make this theatre, we look at areas with highest volume and say those are the ones that we are going to
Number two on the previous slide. Yeah. That one about the cases removed from the court order. Do you have like a category of cases? Because I think that is very important. To have a category of cases that are removed from the court order, and also to have category of cases that are withdrawn. And I'm saying this because there's some things about the crisis of domestic violence cases. They never see their way to court when domestic violence was increasing. And with statistics like this, it can tell you to whether you've got a problem or not. Because indeed you're solving a problem, but this problem shouldn't actually be in the manner in which you solve it, continue to create another problem by the side.
My question was regarding the improvement of delivery in practice. This withdrawal of the consensus and energy to the case. So the idea, as I understand, for this particular process is to do away with backlog. Now, if you are going to withdraw them, is it because you are saving practice by doing that? Or is it because just want to remove the means to reduce the number of the point she's making. That may be the cases are withdrawn and yet the victims of the crime still believe that they need some kind of I don't know if you understand that.
Let me start with the first one. Is it possible to segment the cases withdrawn? I think it is possible to segment. Have we been segmenting? I will have to go back and check and see how quickly we can do that to segment. But indeed, it is possible. Anything is possible. And then. And I'm not speaking to those numbers, but I'm speaking in general in terms of the observations we've been making, albeit anecdotally. We have been making observations that there are a lot of domestic violence cases that get withdrawn. And they are withdrawn because the victim does not want to proceed or they are pressured against proceeding. What we have not been able to do sufficiently is to find a way of ensuring that victims do not withdraw cases. We can only speak to them, but we have not been able to find a meaningful mechanism that ensures that they continue with the case all the way to the finish. Because either they are pressured by family, by their communities, and sometimes by their financial circumstances, and therefore they withdraw cases. So indeed it is true. But we will do the segmenting, we'll find a way of doing the segmenting and come back and report. But I can't promise that it will be tomorrow.
Jasmine, that raised the other question that there may be lots of cases before courts which should actually not be there. You know, I've interacted with some women who have been beaten up. Then I say, why don't you take the matter to the police? They say, no, fine, I'll go to the police. But after this thing is concluded, where do I go? Because these people are dependent
are we saying that what is happening in the traditional courts is not part of justice?
Thank you very much, Chair. Okay, I'm not going to give this side. I see everyone is not looking this side.
Oh, does he want to? I'm wondering whether your question, Dr. Mucheha, is not perhaps should be targeted at the minister. But if you're this, you're in your team, you want to respond, please don't let me stop it.
Let me first deal with the earlier question while I'm trying to think about the second question, but Charles will be kind enough to me. Just on cases being withdrawn and justice not being served on the people who deserve it, I would be the first person to say it's quite possible that indeed it does happen. But the withdrawal of cases is a function of many things, and we've tried to analyze why are cases withdrawn. In fact, the establishment of the case flow management process was intended to prevent that from happening, at least en masse as it is happening today. It was to look at the court files before they are actually. First, you want to try and look at whether the case is ready to go to court way before you enroll it, so that by the time you enroll the case, you are enrolling a case that is court ready, so that you do not have too many postponements and finally a withdrawal of the case when it has been postponed 10 or 15. Or however long the time is. So that was the purpose of the of having the case flow management system. But you will see also that since it has been revamped under the leadership of the Chief Justice, it has also assisted a lot, because we've reduced a lot more cases in the system. But I don't think there's anything much that we can do about the cases that are being withdrawn necessarily, because they are evidence-based. So if there's evidence, the case, or no evidence, the case would then have to be withdrawn. The question is, how did that case get enrolled in the first place? Because it means something failed in the case ready, in the docket ready process. Which led to the case to be enrolled when it wasn't matured in court in the first place. And that process is the process that the Chief Justice is now leading, and we are hoping that he will find answers, and we are dealt with it by that. Now, the second question around the traditional courts not being reported, maybe I will have to apologize for that, not for not reporting, but I guess sometimes you fall into the trap of reporting on what was always reported on, not necessarily on other things. So the traditional courts have been in existence, but we are not documenting their cases ourselves, and we have not created, and that's the point I want to apologize for, any mechanism of drawing that information from the traditional courts to be able to make them part of our reporting mechanism. So that I would have to apologize for. It's something that we might want to think about. I'm not sure how quickly we can come back and talk to that, but it is something that we might want to go back and talk to. What would have assisted, however, is that the traditional court bill, as it was known, if it had been finalized, it would have forced a reporting mechanism of sorts, which would have meant that the presiding officers and everybody who is the establishment of the traditional court are able then to provide us with the information, so that information is reported on. But I think in the absence of that legislation, I guess we got trapped in the legislation making process and waited for that and instead of going there.
Even now that the legislation is not finalized, those courts are in operation.
Sure.
You know where there's a town court in Limpopo. Now where there's an area of Judge the Red Queen. Their court functions so well that white and Indian people who have problems, they prefer to go to the traditional court and not to the real court. I want them to tell you. They prefer the traditional court and not this imported court. And now, in fact, lots of people don't see these modern courts as really meant for justice, but something that is meant for people who have money to go there. Last week I addressed the conference of UNISA law teachers. They invited others from other universities. I was surprised that they're still even grappling. They're not sure whether this should be indigenous courts, whether it should be traditional courts. They're not even sure whether they are talking about customary law or whether they are talking about indigenous law. I say, but common Dutch law is customary law of the Dutch people, and then common law is the customary law of the English people. Why do we have a problem with ourselves on this thing? So I think that it would be important that also you interact with these universities, because they also have lost direction. They don't know. They're not sure where they're trying to go. So they're going to produce wrong lawyers for you.
If I may, just before you respond, sir, I came to help us. Before 19, I think until 1984, or just after 1984, the traditional leadership was well in hand with the magistrate, even in terms of administration. But in addition to that, they reported got a call of court trial. They submitted it to the magistrate so that the magistrate can have a look at them and see that they are indeed performing their work in accordance with the expected by the state. So there is that kind of mechanism. Unless the current magistrate that who came busy after that are no longer familiar with that. But there was a link that they could help to ensure that usefulness of that mechanism is taken on board. Because talking here, for instance, of increased access to justice services by underserviced communities, insofar as the modern courts are concerned, they underserviced those communities, yeah. And I'm just keen to see what they are going to say about who these underserviced communities are. But in essence, they are not being underserved because they are discourse that they are looking at what I'm talking about, which continue to give us. So the fact that we don't have a law yet in terms of new constitution is no reason for the Department of Justice to ignore that establishment. Because we continue to operate. Even in terms of updated legislation. We have, for instance, the Human Rights Commission, which is operating in terms of the law that was enacted under the interim constitution, and I'm sure there are many other institutions. But then that we don't say, well, we are still awaiting a law that is going to regulate the activities of the parliament institution in terms of the constitution. We interact with them, we make sure that we give them time for the law.
Thanks, sir. I just want to follow up on the point about women in each coordinated urban settlement development by me. To just want to ask whether you have a system that prioritizes cases so that we don't actually have a loophole that actually allows different cases to go away due to the probably many cases taking long to resolve. And by the way, we have the Tutela care centers that are supposed to be initially managed to get back.
Suggesting that it's something that we can answer to, it's something that we must go back, explore, we can then come back at a future date and have a conversation again about it, and maybe we can come to a conclusion at that point. Thank you. So it's not that it's because it doesn't have the law or it has the old law, but I was making a reference to the law that was about to be passed, because it would have given us a good governance model, and it would have given us some direct level of intervention and control, and that's the point I was trying to make, and I'm sorry it didn't come out.
Can you just say, Didi, that your answer is satisfactory, but can we request that you make this your special project? Because I'll tell you, it affects the majority of the people who were disadvantaged in the first place, and they see this new system as disadvantaging them, and this may delegitimize the legal system, and we may end up with other situations of service delivery protest within the law, which is the problem. Thank you.
All right.
And I'd love to see this that syllabus.
We can talk good. Thank you. I think we can talk back to close the petition. Then we move to the implementation of the maintenance turnaround project. Honourable members will remember that we came here and we said there were a number of things that we needed to strengthen in the process of maintenance, and we then said we had a maintenance turnaround project, and that emanated from a document that we developed in 2010 going on to 2011, which we used as a guiding, call it a guiding document on how we were going to deal with issues of maintenance. Now, the maintenance program has a number of interventions. The one is the EFT turnaround payment, which we have spoken to somewhat. The second is the implementation of the lean management and streamlining processes, which streamlines business processes in the maintenance payment processes. The third we have to develop a lot of training policies and train officials on that. The last one was to then develop an ICT system that was going to deal with the maintenance on the ground. Now, I would like to start with the EFT project. The EFT, I've already explained it earlier in the broader introduction, and we went EFT in particular because we were having a lot of robbery, sometimes corruption even, and all those things, and really it was a problem. That was on the management side. On the service delivery side, we're having problems that people were not receiving their money on time. So we also were trying to address that. There was also an irritation around queues, because queues were popping up pretty much everywhere, and people were waking up at 4 and sleeping in court sometimes to go and claim their money, and only to get to the window and get told that there is no money. So we decided not to go public with that, and we decided as a government we were going to take a silent strategy and not respond to the media noise, go into the department and try and fix the problem in the department. I can report that as of today, we do not have queues in our court. It's only someone who comes and applies for maintenance or who comes and queries the maintenance. But otherwise, we've cut queues significantly because we've rolled out EFT in a number of courts. So as at the end of the financial year, we had 310 courts that were running the EFT on EFT program compared to the 10 that we had in 2011. We started this project in 2012 financial year. And we are paying a lot of money as you can see. Now, number of beneficiaries that we are paying using EFT in March 2011, we had 15,893, and in March 2012 we had 100,000, and in March 2013 we had 171,000. value of money that we were paying in this way, in March 2011, we only had 9 million. In March 2012, we were paying 63 million. And in March 2013, we are paying 110 million. And we can tell you that right now we are paying much more than that. So if you think that in maintenance, some people are paid 200 rand a month, some people are paid 1,000, and some people are paid 500, and a difference between that, you would realize that to pay 110 million rand is a lot of 200 rand,
yes.
A lot of 500 rand, and a lot of 1,000 rand. Very few people that I know of are paid maintenance more than 10,000 rand a month. There are indeed bank charges, but it's much better in our view, because you would have had to pay transport costs to come to our courts anyway, which are much more than bank charges. And we feel that if you
what
get...
What is the bank charges? The payee
ought to pay to carry the bank charges, because it's their bank account that receives the money.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideal thing is that what we are saying is that if you calculate and you want to do a set of bank charges relative to the transport costs, the transport costs far outweigh the bank charges, and especially if you are going to know sitting at home that this money has come in and go to the bank, and we have a reasonably good measure of expectation and predictability that the money will indeed be in the bank. So you can sit at home and on the day that you want to go to the bank and withdraw the money.
I want to come back to the issue of 200 and the quantum and determination of quantum. Say that it's also one of the sore points in terms of maintenance. That women go and they import and they get put over, but the amount that's determined sometimes becomes so low. It's true that they now using EFT. In the past, then somebody would say, then I have to utilize almost the same amount of money on transport to invest the money, which wasn't really helping, which meant we had a system that's not working. But quantum has always been a big problem, how it's determined. And you know, like when they go to court and the men would say, I have reason to teach you. And they send it in the six of children and the next door neighbors. Quantum for years, and then they have so much of liabilities that quantum becomes this little. How are you? Please continue to look into ways of dealing with that, because that requires attention.
Mm-hmm.
And remember last time what we talked about in terms of the more sophisticated men who have money but they don't want to pay, and they're sending the overseas and things. We talked about
information. You wanted to outsource this maintenance function to the tune of 800 million rand. The DG said when they came around, now we're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, internal resources, we managed to get this level of minimum of efficiency. No queues, you got the money in the bank account. Instead of a lady going and standing in the queue the whole morning to get her money to get it into a bank account now. What happened with the unpaid money? It's not regulated, there's no clear guidance around it. We've confirmed to Treasury, and we've won the argument against them, unclaimed money should not go to the fiscus. And the current problem with procedure is it is paid over to the fiscus, and when the beneficiary comes back two years down the line, we claim this money back from the fiscus, and then we will pay the beneficiary. But we believe that in our new bill, for TPF, we would want to keep this money in our environment for a period of 30 years, periodically advertise that we've got this money of people, and use that money for the benefit of the system, make the system more efficient. But we'll be guided by the legislators and how they believe it should happen. But the further benefit of this system, Chairperson, was that we reduced our cash in transit budget with 13 million rand, because instead of a court every day when a service provider delivering cash at court for maintenance, they no longer need to go there every day, possibly once a week. So I think, again, in the spirit of this administration, was a contentious issue for us to say, we're not going to outsource this. And we came to you and we told you about this. But again, without additional resources, we managed to have improvement in service delivery. Our promise to our people is that within 24 hours, at the minimum, after your money has been correctly identified, we will pay it to you. Our big challenge is still identification, because mining houses pay big amounts to us, and we still now need to set up a process to identify who this money belongs to, or wait for a schedule from police. But I think our challenge is for the next year or two to improve on that area, to stabilize the system, so that we then can get to proper accounting to you as an oversight authority. But we are quite proud about what we've achieved here, and we've got now 370 courts on the system. We are busy now rolling out Sienakar and Aruba. So it was, we're getting now to the rural towns. But why is it, apart from the inefficiency in accounting for the part, we believe we've done a little bit more in terms of the service delivery, and I think this is what we did in Sienakar. So, thank you.
What's the total sum of money cumulatively that's available that's not spent?
It is not so.
Maybe if you can just also divide up in 2 years, if it's possible. But for now, I just want to know cumulatively how much money have you got that you're content.
I need to look at the numbers, but can I give you a sense of unclaimed money that was given back to the National Fiscus last year?
Mm.
59 million rand, but 99% of that money is bail that is unclaimed. I think the maintenance money is unclaimed is less than a million rand.
Okay. So that's the total third party?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Earlier on, when the DG was talking about the question of maintenance, she said something to the fact that sometimes they end up not knowing whether maintenance is the money being paid or not, because the transaction now is between the two parties. But now I see here this amount of money, 510 million rand in March this year. How do they come to know of this money?
Yes.
If it doesn't come through the department anymore, but goes directly to.
So let me clarify. Here, this is the money that goes to us. In us, yes. EFT works this way, Chair. Maybe let me clarify how it works. You have a court order. I must pay her court order. So once the court has ordered that, I then get the court. I say, okay, let's say it's a court in Joburg, let's say it's run by court. I get the court details, I get the case number, and I deposit the money in the court account, bank account. Right? Then someone in the department, Johan in the department, then does a little bit of things, check how much money has come through, receives. Because once I deposit the money, I will then send a reference to the Department of Justice. So they say, okay, this is Lebu's money. So now Johan does the capturing and everything else, and then Lebu's bank account is credited
with that money. That's how it works.
It still goes through.
Yes, yes. Here, EFT goes through this budget.
More for the
electronic. Yeah. Is it?
No. You see, why is the whole some high percentage? We took it to mean that the EFT between the sub and the direct.
Yeah.
And hence, we wondered now, okay, you no longer playing any role. How did you come by that figure? Okay, it does go by
so that is why I said there are two regimes. Regime number one is this regime, is this where we have total control. Regime number two is when we say,
oh, sorry. Regime number two is when we say, we've recommended to the magistrates commission and they've agreed to make orders that are direct between A and B. In other words, we then don't come in, the money doesn't come to us, it doesn't get exposed to the risks that we were trying to prevent in the first place. But it means the benefit of this is even bigger than this benefit. Because here you still have to do the administration, the checking and everything, the reconciliations and all of that. There it means A just pays B, so B receives money on the same day. Or however many.
If it happens.
If it does happen.
This really happens every year, and we have at least it maybe once a year, and it will have needs to be made.
We will have to find a mechanism of doing that. Thank you very much, Mr. Lager.
Thanks, Jefferson. just on the quantum, the question that was raised by the honourable member, we realised that in many cases on maintenance, it was mostly the criminal section that were being followed. So we've developed and trained the maintenance officers on a manual on civil remedies so that they can really go for attachment, because what you want is not an arrest, you want the money. So that there is that manual which we're using that guides them in terms of, you know, enforcing civil remedies, because then we actually can attach properties. So and we continue to employ the, you know, additional maintenance officers and investigators incrementally on an annual basis. But the maintenance officers also have an access to the ITC system where they can actually see, like, people who are hiding their assets, you know, they claim they don't have money. But the determination of quantum as well does not take into account that I wear flushing shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not essential that I wear flushing shoes. I must buy ordinary shoes. I can't take my money and put it on expensive suits because I don't want to pay maintenance. You know, the courts will not look into that. They will look, I'm at rest, but I can't go overboard and then deny, you know, my children the responsibility of the maintenance. Yes, and with respect to the last question on unclaimed maintenance, man, what we normally do in the court, we have Bimbizo in the different communities, because we don't want, although in law after is it 12 months from right now, we have to, you know, take it back to treasure, but we try, and in fact we are required to actually make an effort. So we have the names, you know, in some courts they actually put the names in the notice board of the court to say, the following people, can you please try, and, you know, if you know them or what, can you please come and claim your money. I would have in this way, would also do that. But also when we have radio shows, would also, you know, appeal to members of the community, say, look, there is, without telling them that X has how much, but that there is money that is unclaimed in this court, can we? And we found when we did that, a lot of people then, because some people apply and maybe the process takes long, or a person loses work, they don't pay, and later on they start paying, but, you know, nobody's picking up their money. So I think with all those efforts, especially on the civil remedies, we've actually done a lot. The DG will tell the story of the horses. I don't want to tell you the story of the horses.
Okay.
And then on the in KZN, the maintenance investigators, they are very, very keen. Some rich person decided to invest their money in horses and cars and all this, and they claim they don't have money. And they found that they have these assets, and then they were attached. Sold so that we can actually recover the money to actually pay for the children. So it's a very, very useful system. We are looking into, you know, the tracing of defaulters. There is a strategy that we want to launch as part of 16 days of activism of no violence against women, so that we can really, you know, put in a lot of effort towards ensuring that we get as much money as possible around people that have responsibility to be.
Not only him, but a lot of people. And remember, once they do that, also they take the burden on the government. So it's shame. Because when they, to some extent, some of them end up having to be used up to that stage, and their parents can afford.
Thank you very much. Chair, on the we indicated also that we introduced ELIN management. ELIN management is a process mapping initiative. Just to tell us from date of application to date of court order, how long does it take? In other words, we're trying to measure each of our office services that we provide, how long does it take us to provide that service. We targeted a number of things, but primarily for the purposes of what we are measuring and reporting on is we are measuring the time it takes for a person entering the court and getting out of the court having been served. We did a pilot in 9 provinces, but the Umlazi pilot and a few others were done in 2011, but last year in 2012-2013 we then continued with the pilot because there seems to be a lot of people involved in the same. But just on queue management, and I'm not going to speak to everything else, just on queue management, we found that it took 3 hours 30 minutes for someone to be serviced at Umlazi court before we introduced lien management. We've cut that time to 1 hour 30 minutes. And what we are now doing is we are just observing how long does it take us to sustain the 1 hour 30 minutes. And then we will work towards reducing that time and reducing that time and reducing that time. But first we must see whether it's sustainable. But we've looked at a number of things, how long it takes us from standing up and taking a paper and putting it in the printer and stamping it and giving it to the next person so that it, we can figure out how long does it take for a person to sit in our system. And this goes to 2 things, Chair. It goes to 1, just addressing the service delivery issue of people spending time in court instead of where they ought to be. But secondly, it speaks to the infrastructure we have. If we can move people in quite quickly, move them out quite quickly, we can take more people instead of building more courts everywhere, but just improve the services where we can. We can continue building courts, but at least the pressure won't be that bad than it is. But the biggest problem is that if there are also inefficiencies in the few courts that we have, then it means you are just taking forever to deliver justice. And that's the problem we're trying to address. Then in terms of how long it took us in terms of paying maintenance, at the beginning, we used to pay maintenance within 16 days of money having been deposited into our system and us having paid it out. Now we're doing it in 5 days. There will always be time we spend in the verification process. We don't believe 5 days is optimal, but we believe we can cut that period down, but right now we are sitting at 5 days, and we must just work on perfecting that side. Thank you. You don't have to physically go to the court. You can EFT the court, but from the day the court receives the money, you see, Chair, the 5 days assumes everything else. But if we know the money came from Nungulu Legofinda, it's going to Lebumpahle. It doesn't take 5 days. It can be processed quickly. But if I have to, because remember, Chair, not everybody pays as an individual. We receive schedules from the Department of Justice. Let me not talk about other departments. From the Department of Justice, we receive schedules of people who are paying maintenance that way. Just our own schedules must come on time. In other words, we must move from that desk to the next desk on time. And it must be processed on time, and we must pay on time. We don't don't prioritize our people relative to everybody else. We do that. So whether the state comes from Old Mutual or comes from the post office or comes from South African whatever, the schedules are treated the same way. Each court will go through each name. Name number one, this schedule, let me give an example. This schedule contains 10 million worth of maintenance from Company A. If it contains 10 million, the relevant people, the administrators, will then say 10,000 goes to Nungululego, 5,000 goes to Lebu, this goes to Charles, that goes, and then verify, and then someone signs off, so that we don't pay wrong people, and then they put the money. That is why the 5 days. I just wanted to explain why we get to the 5 days and how we get to the 5 days. But for the in fact,
how are the payments made?
No.
But do they have certain standards?
Yes. Some of them do. Some of them, like in any environment, people manage these things change from time to time. So you may find that you were working with Company A, and Company A had good schedules, and then they changed, the person was doing that work, and the next person didn't quite appreciate the relevance of numbers, and just gave you a mix of other numbers. It means the court must stay on end trying to check that. No, we have a lot of
money to find out.
Good money. Yes, they do give us money. That's why I was saying some we know they do it right. The ones who don't, we go to them, like we go, we call us and we say don't make sense, revise them. But meanwhile, the beneficiary doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
The beneficiary is sitting at home or coming and checking, and the money is not there. We do prioritize as a policy and as a strategy of the department and of our cluster,
mm-hmm.
is that any case that involves a vulnerable person
mm-hmm.
must be prioritized.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic violence cases and related cases are indeed prioritized.
Mm-hmm.
Are they always prioritized all the time? Sometimes not. And it would largely depend on the people who are setting the court roll at source. In other words, the prosecutor who normally runs with the court roll with placing the matter on the court roll with the judiciary, the legal aid, and all of those people. But as a principle and as a policy, it was agreed that we would prioritize cases of vulnerable children, people in particular. Your domestic violence cases, your children's cases, and the like, your rape cases and the like. Yes, indeed, we do prioritize that. But they are those that do fall off the cliff, I must admit. It's split. We report it as a generic KPA, but NPA reports on it as a specific KPA, because it is NPA ultimately who puts criminal cases on the roll. But obviously, the role must be there for the cases to be
brought
through. Yes, yes. The role must be there. In other words, we must, and what we've been trying to do over the past however many months is to say, can we know the role in advance so that we can know all the cases that are likely to collapse? Because sometimes cases are put on the roll for 3 weeks, and the court case collapses in 2 days, and it means that role is now open. And put any other cases. So all the cases you want to prioritize, you can then put them there. But now with for instance, the sexual offences court, it gives us a little bit of space for other matters, because then your sexual offences cases are going to be removed from priority here and are going to be put in the court in sexual offences cases. It then means that your normal role, you can prioritize cases even faster. We continue to have defaulters in the system, and the Western Cape and KZN regions have been leading in pursuing these cases. I must indicate this to the honourable members because they may be thinking that we haven't been doing anything in this area as a department. Sometimes change is good, sometimes change can take you back so far. I think that some of the excitement thought, hey, this is okay.
Name and shame campaign. know what I'm saying.
Let me confine myself to the maintenance one and the disposal. The law, we took an opinion, so we took the matter under advisement just to be sure that we are doing the right thing for one reason and one reason only. That we, part of our biggest obligation is to protect the rights of the child. And when you name Nangululego, naturally people know who my children are, so you've exposed that child. So that protection, that the benefits that you're trying to derive from the naming and training ends up harming the very child that you are fighting for. And it was felt that it's too big a risk for that child. It's too traumatizing for that child. Any other naming and training we are not opposed to, but certainly this one we felt in the broader interest of the child, let's find other mechanisms of getting to the defaulters and making them pay rather than making them pay. Of course, they are getting away with the law because they ought to be maintaining their children. But the broader interest, when you weigh between the two, I we felt the interest of the child.
If you can name and shame, it means already the letter has been deported, isn't it? So which means you need to step up your system to be in the position to really manage to get the money from the father.
That is
yeah, this is naming and shaming in the media.
Yes,
so the defaulter's name, the intention was that the defaulter's name would appear. Yeah,
so the point I'm making is that once you are ready to name and shape, it means
you already know
the person. Within the system, you know who he is, where he lives. What it means is that we need to step up our systems so that we manage to actually get the money. If it means arresting him, we must arrest. That's how we can shame it, quietly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the right way. But the intention here was to derive some political benefit. This is what we in the West are doing for our people. Maintenance defaulters are going to, names will appear in the media. And now the DG has explained why this couldn't be done. No, it can't.
Not
that.
We've touched on the slides on the topic.
Maybe I think it's important now.
There's no children involved.
International Register of Sexual Offenders. The most unfortunate thing is that there's been a lot of stories in this week already around either teachers or caregivers or important things in children's lives, doing things to children. So it's so opportune that we should be discussing this. The register right now is working. Let me say this. Let me retract what I just said and start again. Phase two of the register right now works very well. We are getting names, we are loading them in the system, and we are surpassing our targets, and we are happy about that. The challenge remains phase one of the register, because phase one of the register is the historical information on all people who would otherwise be in the sexual offences register. Now, that's where I think the challenge is. So when we say the register is working, we mean phase two of the register. In fact, we must try and say that all the time. I just realize that it sounds better that way. Because when we say the register is working, we say, are you issuing the certificate? We are not issuing the certificate, and I'd like to make that clear to Parliament. We are not issuing the certificate as yet. And the reason why we are not issuing the certificate is because we only have information from 2019 2008, 2009, and to date, and we can issue certificates on those people, but we don't know what else did they do prior to that period. So we may say you can work with children. Meanwhile, you don't know whether 10 years before that they had committed an offence, and that is what is an issue. And it takes all of us, because we are really battling with the historical information. At least our experience here tells us that perhaps in the next life, when we develop legislation, we must develop it concurrent with developing the system, because when the systems fall, the historical information gets lost quite quickly, and most of the information is no longer necessary. It's something that we are all grappling very hard with, but as I say, the positive thing is that on phase two, we are moving with speed, and we are going to create a very formidable register going forward. The member of
the SAPS's role?
Chair, SAPS's role is ideal.
Let me tell you why I'm actually asking. Because now you are worried about history. And history might be SAPS records. And also history might be through Interpol, which is still part of SAPS work. That's why I want to know what is the SAPS is for.
SAPS
is
keep the criminal records. There's a criminal record center within the SAPS. They keep the criminal records. But I must indicate that, and this is the issue, and maybe members must just understand the issue and it would assist us in getting around the problem. Historically, in your criminal record, if you had violated a child, it would have read in the center for. It would not have read in the center for against a child below the age of 16 or whatever the age, but a child. Now, that's what we can find. And what we then need to do is to go and say, this indecent assault was against whom? Was it against a child? Was it against a mentally challenged person? Who was it against? Because you can't put the name in the register if the person was not a child or if the person was not mentally challenged. Those are the two requirements, only two requirements that will enable you to put the name in the register. Now, historically, from time immemorial, including injustice, the cases were just, the verdict was indecent, you are guilty of indecent assault, or you are guilty of rape, or you are guilty. It didn't say you are guilty of raping a child, or you are guilty of raping a mentally challenged person. And now, trying to unpack that information over years is just proven to be a nightmare. And that is what is preventing us then from moving on with phase one and finalizing phase one. Because if we can, if the legislation, of course hindsight is always a better science, but if the legislation had said, go to the past 5 years, perhaps it would have been better. Now, we all did not know what the implications of this thing was going to be. Because I guess when legislation was developed, we did not go into the research to say, how is information collected at this point? We would have known if we had done that. We would have known that information is not collected the way that will make the act retrospective. And that is what the major.
So retrospectivity is not really a problem. Retrospectivity is not really a problem in terms of availability of information. You're just worried about the accuracy of the information.
No, it is a problem in terms of the availability of information. Because some cases, well, the Criminal Record Center, as I say, if it says that, it means you then have to go and unpack. And I mean, how many cases are decided per day in South Africa, criminal cases are decided per day in South Africa, and were decided per day sorry. So that's basically the challenge. The challenge, we sent out teams of young data capturers to go and find sites and go and research and in some areas those sites are lost, and in some areas it is proving to be a serious challenge. But it's not something that we have stopped working on. So those data capturers are there. We started again in Pretoria. We will get it right eventually, but we won't get all the numbers, and that's my worry, because we won't get all the numbers. And perhaps at this stage, Chair, and I don't know whether it's appropriate to say this, but this is one area of verification that must be looked at seriously for amendment, so that we can get to a point where the Registrar for Sexual Offences can certify and say X can work with children and Y can't work.
This question I'm raising now resorts in the domain of the political masters and the executive. There have been complaints about there being two registers. There are, by the way. One is administered by the social development, the other by police, by justice. There's been complaints from the NGOs and civil society organizations out there that it may become problematic. Which one do you think? Does the creche or the nurses who children's home, does it refer? Is it required to, well, it will have to refer to both? Not so. And will that not now? I don't know whether you want to comment, but it's not something that we can avoid for much longer, because we don't deal with these things there at the grassroots level, whereas the civil society organizations do, and they've raised this as a serious problem. But DG, if you want to know, or whoever.
Thanks, Chairperson. We've grappled with the matter, and I must say myself that we've not made as much progress as we would have loved to. We've met several times with the GAP and the police to look at specifically the two issues, that if we merge, what would be the outcome of the registers, because they primarily serve slightly different purposes. And the second one was, where would it be located once they're merged? The proposal that we have placed at the committee was that it may probably be better to place the register, the combined register, maybe with the police, because of the role that they play in terms of the criminal record center as well, because there's a connection there. So we've made the proposal that we could also split the register into different parts. And we are awaiting the response to the proposal that we've made to DSD as to, you know, whether they are happy with it, because we are of the view that for us there is no need really for the register to be lying within the Department of Justice as such, you know. Because it's actually better placed, as I said, with the police. But we'll continue to try and, you know, find, you know, responses from DSD so that we can then conclude the matter. It would appear that, you know, from their side, they also have, for now, and this is the indication that we're getting, that they don't quite seem to have the capacity. You know, if maybe we were to move the register, that they've said, look, for now, can we hold them until they've, you know, looked at, you know, the capacity issues before they can then commit.
And the second question I have, DG, is clearly we call it a register, but it's not a question of there's a book somewhere in Johannesburg, and I must phone Colin and say, listen, just pop in there and have a look at it. Is it on a website? is it? How do you access it? Assuming that I'm...
Can you send me good documentation?
No, it's in a system, but it's not in the website. So it is in the system, but it's not in the website. It's not in the book. We've migrated. We did keep the register manually at some point, but we've now made it digitized it, and it's now electronic. The point that I'm trying to raise, Chair, is that the register is not accessible to you and I. The register is only accessible to the Director General responsible. Well, in DSC, in our case, it's only accessible not to me, to the Register for Sexual Offences. So I apply to her if I want to appoint somebody who must be registered, and that person, then when the application process starts and she can issue a certificate, she can then issue me with a certificate which says A is and proper to deal with children. But yes, indeed, it is not a book, it is a system. At least from the justice perspective. I did try to access this information, Chair, not illegally, correctly, in social development to try and trace parents. Not my parents, but some parents. And I was told in no uncertain terms that you have to follow this whole process before you can get the information. I was trying to ask somebody. I took the person across and I said, he is the person who asked them directly. Thank you.
So there are checks and balances, quite obviously.
If it's going to inside the SAPS, if social development are doing, because you're thinking of social services, once a child has been sexually abused before the end, then they're going to have other services that are going to follow, and they may actually need to have a record for them to be in the position to proceed to such services. But then you still need one to, depending on who is the perpetrator. Maybe the child in need of care, and they might need such records, you know. If you take it to SAPS, would they easily have access to it? Because I see them utilizing this register to be in the position to address other areas of their work.
I fully agree with you. I do think that that's why it's taking us time, because it's a matter that needs to be explored quite comprehensively. We can't make another mistake about this register. So I agree with you. I would personally have, in fact, that's what I said in the ISCCJ, that in my mind, the register would be best placed in social development, because they provide social support and social assistance to vulnerable people. However, I can understand where the colleagues come from, and of course it's something that once they've explored the discussions, we'll bring back to the ISCC, and then we'll deal with it at that point, and agree or not agree with them before we make recommendations to the ministers. But because of the uses arising out of this register, that would determine where it has to be placed. And that is why we were very clear at the Department of Justice that first and foremost, if we do merge, the register will not reside in justice, because other than dealing with the issues of legal system, the social development deals with more social related issues that would benefit from having the register within their proximity.
One of the one of the I don't think there's anything more to add. I had heard of this anyway. I just want to reassure the community that the one child justice centers that are out there, most of them are working well. We did have a problem with the one in Eastern Cape. We are selling clinics at an interdepartmental level between ourselves and of the benefits of the community, in terms of the basic education legislation, they are responsible for running these cases of where children in elementary school, I don't know whether they're still called in schools of industry.
Schools of industry.
They run the schools of industry, and now in terms of the Child Justice Act, they have to transfer that into the Department of Social Development, so that we have one department that is responsible for all the and then, unfortunately, when that happens, is that the transfer of the people, the human being side of the transfer, came into this equation. They were sitting in different salary levels. The ones that came from basic education were paid 30% than the ones from social development and left 20% people. Or vice versa, I can't remember who was paid more, and vice versa, and so was the same color. So, but we are putting it back.
Cases of safety, they also fall under social development. Yeah. All right. Tina, we only are responsible broadly for the one child justice. All right. Then I did indicate at length the performance of the Office of the Family Advocate. The only thing I'd like to add here, because we've spoken about underperformance, the only thing I'd like to add, and people would like to show this slide, please remember the numbers, 100% target, 19% achievement, 50% target, 9% achievement, and then I will show you one slide, which is the current financial year. I just wanted to indicate that we've given this unit additional resources, I think, to the tune of about 20 million. And the unit is filling its capacity. We had reduced the target, as I indicated earlier, but we are already seeing that they are going to meet their target because of the new capacity that is coming through. We will give them at least this year, the current financial year, for them to finish. And then if they perform consistently and they have filled capacity, we will then revise that. We just wanted to show you where are we for quarter one performance and quarter two will probably look more or less the same. Thank you.
In the last paragraph, family advocate, you created 33 new posts of family law advocates. As they will see, and the tenant is the best to create the dealing with it.
Yes, and that difference is really important. It's not just a question of semantics, it's a big process to create a post. It takes forever and a day to create a post. And that is why we say we've created or we are creating. The total number of cases filled, I think we'll give you the answer tomorrow morning, because that intervention happened in this current financial year's budget, which is after April 2013. So they've managed to create those positions. There are those that have already been advertised, and I think there are those that have already been filled, but we don't have the number here yet. It's quite a new development, but we will inform you tomorrow, we will report tomorrow, check. We will just double check that we take tonight. Court buildings, we had a target of two, we were able to complete one. The Bulukwane one court, this is the High Court now, not the one that was there. That court. It's a problem. It's moved from one big problem to the next. From big water being found, big rocks being found under the ground to big water being found, or a lot of water, I don't know whether there's big water, a lot of water being found. And then the contractor went there was no construction yet. And the reason why there's no construction is that the engineers are still doing the reassessment of where all the work is and then they went over. So it's going to take some time before physical construction continues. The court is at, I think, fourth level. So it advanced quite progressively. It does look very nice right now. It looks like a court that is about to finish, but there's a lot more work that still needs to be done before the chapter.
It goes back to the comment you gave last week about the time frame in terms of completion of the building. Because remember we talked about this when it became clear and evident that the delay was costing us more money. At the beginning of the project, we actually were planning for so much for that building. But because of the expense, I don't know whether the same thing is happening with the Mpopo. You might find that now we're talking about much more money as compared to what you thought initially. And the same comment went to housing, South High Court. I don't know whether it's complete now with the renovation. And the fact that we should actually also try by all means not to have any more additional new costs rather than try and maintain the renewable materials. Some people are talking about very high cost now. Or maybe it's an expansion here. Instead of going to start like a new court somewhere else, let's rather bring all the courts that we've got up to standard. Mm-hmm.
No, the point is noted, and we've gone back, we've remodeled the budget we have to try and respond to that, but we've also please remember, most of these courts had already been announced, and it was an elaborate process would have been done many years ago, not last year. Mm-hmm. Or the pre. So whatever we are going to be building is not what we are planning to build that now. It's the court that they announced, like Mamelodi was announced way back 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a few more courts were announced many years ago, and so as a result, we still have to build those courts. I'm not suggesting we'll build all of them. I do fully agree with the contention that we do need to maintain the infrastructure. And it's a conversation we are having in the department and the conversation we are having in public works as well. But having said that, we have these targets that South Africa is expecting. And if a court is funded, it still needs to begin if and when we get money. The fact that in the actual building of the court we get delayed by this and that problem, that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
Just looking at this point, I'm thinking about what Mr. Daniel Jack has just said about building new courts and renovating or maintaining existing courts. Provided we have in mind our policy about bringing justice closer to the people. Remember, a lot of our people travel long distances, even those in the townships and areas. And so the new court in Cape City, what is that? You know, that's intended to bring the court closer to the people. Whereas before this court was built, they had to travel some 70 plus kilometers. And so you need to weigh the two up, okay? So as long as we have that in mind, we should be okay.
I think that this sentiment was actually expressed when there was concern about the state of the court in general. The South Court, it was the SCA, it was the one here, and another one, I don't remember which one, where we had problems. Serious problem. And then the report was actually also indicating that we are building new courts somewhere. And that's when we actually said maybe shouldn't we. We can, of course, it's important for justice to be brought closer to the people. But at the same time, maybe the time is such that we need to make it a point that we protect what we've got before we proceed.
The point is taken. Thank you. conversion of branch costs, this project has moved relatively slowly compared to where we wanted to be by now, but we've been learning in the process. We were able to achieve 18 of the 24 costs, so we underachieved in terms of conversion processes. That's because the consultations are unbelievable in this area, the Sabuya General area, the important person you must go through, you must consult the communities, the judiciary, but we, in this financial year, I think we're going to see improvement in the number of courts converted up to the end of the financial year. Small claims, what I've spoken to this, the biggest challenge really is getting people to spend as commissioner. We've now considered and spoken to some of the people who have agreed that they could be used as commissioners here and as commissioners in other courts, in other small claims courts. But that workload may not be sustainable for all courts. Maybe if the distances are not too far apart, if the distances are far apart, then they will not be as well. But we keep exploring opportunities to extend small claims, because we were behind target on this one. But we are still hopeful that we will find people who are with us. Unfortunately, people who work for government are not allowed to be commissioners.
Thank you. Thank you.